You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. There's no tenderness like before in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, but baby, you've lost that love and feeling. Whoa, that love and feeling. You've lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone, gone, gone. Whoa, boom, 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 boom. Have you lost that loving feeling, Vito?
I have now.
Welcome to Men's Junk.
Hey.
My name is Sebastian Ankiel, and I'm with
Vito Rizzo.
And we are here to do a big time.
What are we here to do?
Wow, I want to hear more about you, Vito. Some of the listeners have heard some of our last few episodes, and we wanted to get into some of the nitty-gritty about who you are and where you come from and what you're all about.
Who was that, by the way? Who are you singing?
That is the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, we got the Righteous Brothers up here, the Wacky Four, Booth Room Four. Oh!
I'm scared.
My dreams of a morning radio jock will never die.
What was that movie where they have Good Morning Vietnam?
Yeah, Robin Williams.
Yeah, that's
it
great.
It was called Good Morning Vietnam.
There you go. You have a future.
Have a future.
Go back to Nam, bro.
Good Morning Vietnam! Okay.
This is the greatest intro
just
ever.
Imagine if this is the first thing people listen to when they wake up.
Yeah, you know, like you wake up and, you know, you have your coffee in your hand and then you just turn on to Men's Junk and then there's Vito Rizzo.
Whoa, we got ourselves a wacky day. Mattress and Lions, watch out. That's a tough one.
You may want to turn.
15 minutes for the top of the hour, 45 minutes bottom of the hour. Weather coming up, sports, sports, sports. I practice that all the time when I try.
Well, this is an episode all about you, so I am totally open to this.
Okay.
So,
Last episode,
we went over just a little bit about my life, where I come from, what I was like when I was a kid, and kind of did like a full, almost chronological style interview about me. So I wanted to kind of get into it with you. So maybe we could start with who you were or where you came from, like as a kid. I mean, where were you born? What were your parents like?
I was born from my mom.
But where was that?
That was in bright, beautiful British Columbia, Richmond, BC.
And can you remember any of that before you went to elementary school? Do you have any recollection?
The birth?
No, the birth. No, not the birth. Just in general, like as a kid.
So earliest memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would be your earliest memory?
Well, I remember earliest memories. So my parents broke up fairly early on, so there were only few years where they were actually together. It was maybe a year after my brother was born. They're like, yeah, we're done with this thing. But I remember, had a big backyard. We had the dog, and me and the dog would get up to all sorts of shenanigans and dig holes everywhere. Actually, that was pretty awesome time. You know, you had two parents in the house and semi-functional, but I don't remember overly much.
Okay. I mean, so I guess
This is all
Of course, you're just
great kindergarten stuff like that.
So what was elementary school like for you?
So it was interesting because I did kindergarten in one school, then we moved to another school where I did up to grade 4, I believe, 4 or 3.
Okay. So you switched schools?
Switched schools.
Yeah.
And then after grade 3 or 4, went to another school.
Wow.
Yeah, moved several times.
What was the impetus for changing?
Well, the first one was we moved because my parents got a divorce.
Okay.
And my mom got us two kids, me and my brother,
mm-hmm.
And we had to go with her. And then my mom immediately found some guy to start dating immediately after separating from my dad. Yeah, yeah. She moved along quick. Just a little pre-history.
Okay.
Pre-me history.
Yeah.
My biological dad is my mom's second husband.
Okay, and, got it. Okay.
You know, I actually have a stepbrother and a stepsister
mm-hmm.
who I haven't seen in, you know, nearly 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's bizarre. So, parents separated. My mom got me and my brother. Probably wasn't the best choice.
Okay. What would be the correct choice?
Probably my dad. It would have been a lot less chaotic. And
oh, yeah.
I remember we moved into some shack in some godforsaken area in Surrey, British Columbia, Canada. Never. If you're traveling to BC, Canada, don't go to Surrey. Whatever you do.
Surrey's nice.
No, it's not.
Just parts of Surrey that are nice. It's like any city that's...
with not a thing to do.
So, I mean, there's so many things to do with all those streets and houses.
Yeah, all the streets and houses.
Yeah, lots of streets and houses.
Yeah, so we're in a shack for a little while, and then we moved to a townhouse complex.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of memories started, like, actually...
Oh, okay.
I was old enough where I actually retained a lot of the memories from there. And I haven't thought about this in a long time, but we lived in a townhouse, and that's where I went to. Oh, there's a fourth elementary school.
There's four elementary schools.
One shut down, and all our classes moved to the new elementary school.
Just trying to, like, maybe I'm superimposing some of my own experiences.
Go ahead.
I remember very vividly, like, when I made friends, and then if I, like, left to another school, I'd be like, you know, really upset. So was that ever, like, part of the experience for you? Like, did you make friends? Did you, like, set roots in one place and then have to move? And was it abrupt, or was it kind of like you were just kind of like...
You know what? It was more
Really?
Because I never really had a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. And when I use the word friend from here on forward till post high school... When I use the word friends, I mean that term very, very loosely.
Mm-hmm.
They were friends during school, elementary and high school, were always just temporary things.
Okay.
And either they wanted to be friends with me or they didn't want to be friends with me. Mm-hmm. I was just a commodity that take it or leave it.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So going from one school to another, there's the initial, like, ooh, it's a new school, I don't know anybody, mm-hmm. But I never really had a lot of friends, so I'm like, all right, business as usual.
Oh, wow. So did you find hobbies or things to take up your time?
So in the townhouse is probably the most childlike experience mm-hmm. of my life, because it's a townhouse complex, so there are other kids around, and the school's just a little ways away. We would walk to school, and we'd actually, like, play with the kids, mm-hmm. you know, and interact with the kids and stuff like that, and then you interact with the bullies and stuff like that. So that was the most childlike thing of my childhood.
It's just playing and...
Playing and, like, just like, oh, you're a kid too? Let's play in the woods. There was a creek.
Yeah.
Woodsy area.
So you're kind of blessed in a way during that time when you're at the townhouse.
That was a very short time.
Really?
That was a very short time. Remember, that was like grade 1 to maybe 3 or 4. Yeah.
How'd you do in school?
This is great.
Oh,
so
all right, I'm waiting on.
So already, something's just amiss with me. Like, I'm not doing too hot in school. I'm kind of just not grasping a lot of it. I'm a little mm-hmm. slow.
Okay,
and was officially diagnosed with dyslexia.
Okay,
and then immediately shipped into the special ed class for parts of school. So during school, like, you know, I didn't have to do French
mm-hmm.
because dyslexia and French can go As the French say, fuck off. So, yeah, I had a special ed and this and that, and that kind of isolated me further from the kids.
Yeah, I guess, mean, in a way. That sounds like it'd be really challenging.
It made school a lot easier, because imagine you're taken out of class like, okay, here's the math, here's your homework, and we're going to give you a little time. I would be taken out of the classroom, put in the special ed classroom, and have somebody right there to help me along.
Oh, okay.
And so it meant a lot less homework, if at all. So it was a big plus. I thought it was amazing. Yeah,
that's cool.
I never got bullied for being in special ed class.
Okay.
It was never really a thing. I got bullied a lot more for my size or my inadequacies.
Is this elementary school now?
Yeah, is still elementary. Oh, okay. This is still like grade 1 to 3.
Okay.
And it was still like childhood, and mm-hmm. you know, I still play with the kids. I wasn't the big fat kid yet.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Later on.
So what role did you identify? Like in those children, you know, they have a bunch of archetypes. What role did you play?
I don't know if I
were you played... in the middle. Were you? You could be in the middle, I suppose.
I don't even know.
Okay.
You know, I don't have any significantly bad memories of school life
mm-hmm.
during that time. Out of school, totally different scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, like grew up in kind of a lower middle class family, a lot of hand-me-down clothes.
Yeah.
You know, I still remember one funny thing in elementary is I had to wear this hockey jacket for winter, and I didn't like hockey. I've still have yet to have seen a single hockey game, and I'm Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember had a Penguin. I don't even know what team that was. And I would get like, you like that team? Like, what are you doing? Like, you don't like Vancouver? Like, I don't give a shit.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff like that.
What was the response from the parents in terms of, you know, they hear that their son is not doing as well?
I don't know. I don't know. That was never talked to me specifically.
Yeah.
I know there was...
But they didn't... There wasn't no, you know, concern or no. They weren't like
no.
upset or
no.
disappointed. There's no feeling around that at all.
No.
Wow. There okay.
just wasn't a whole lot of that.
Yeah.
I know my mom didn't do too well in school. My dad had some kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do too well in school. I think it's just a family tradition of not doing well in school.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wasn't dumb by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. In fact, I would excel like a couple things like math. I was just a whiz.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah. Elementary during grades 1 to 3, 4 were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, home life, lived in a shack.
Okay.
You know, dirty house, stepdad was barely around.
Yeah.
He was an entrepreneur kind of starting up his business for
okay.
the first time. So he was doing trips and this and that, and he was never around. So it was basically my mom mm-hmm. taking care of me. And my mom is chaotic.
Yeah.
At the best of times, horrific at the worst of times. Yeah, and then we had
as a young child, how did you deal with your mother? I mean, everyone has their own coping mechanisms to chaos.
You're not aware. I was not aware at that time of. I thought like, well, isn't this every family's?
Yeah, of course.
Like just chaos, mom frantic, and you know doesn't know whether to go left or right, mm-hmm. and stepdad is almost completely out of the picture, mm-hmm. And a rotating of cousin-related babysitters that are like,
yeah,
less said about my extended family, the better.
Yeah, of course.
Like, just a side note, my extended family, all the males on my mother's side of the family are either drug addicts, in jail, or dead.
Wow.
All of them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's... crazy.
Yeah, we had one cousin, and this is just a story. I was told this when I was still in elementary after I moved to a different elementary,
mm-hmm.
that our cousin got killed in a robbery, bank robbery.
Okay.
Like at an ATM. And I was told a version of the story was not corrected.
Okay.
And only in recent years was it corrected. And it was my cousin held somebody at gunpoint at an ATM at a bank, and the cops killed them.
Okay.
That was my family. Like, it's not a great family. It's but say that.
Giving you all the space to express yourself today.
Oh, man. I didn't know, like, this was...
So how are you not in jail? I mean, just kind of taking it to this time.
This is really weird. I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
Me and my brother are cut from a different cloth, and my dad, my biological dad, was really a rock, because he was very even keel, and we would go visit him on the weekend every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it was a actual normal life. He was a middle class man, worked a 9-to-5 job for, I don't know, 50 years, you know, no, 40 years or some odd. And, you know, we'd have toys there and food and watch movies. And it felt like, hey, this is nice.
Yeah.
It's like... the Prince of Bel-Air, like every 2 weeks, you go to a nice house.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I mean, nice relatively compared to a shack. And, you get food and cookies and treats and video games. Super... And, yeah, it was great. You look forward to it, because in the shack, there was nothing. There's no video games, no TV, nothing. You just school, and then you come home, and you just pass time by.
What was your relationship with your brother like?
So my brother, we have an interesting relationship in that he's the younger brother, only by, you know, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just throughout our childhood kind of just this brotherly kind of conflict. Like, he breaks some of my toys, you know, I steal some of his food.
Do you have any stories with, you know... I mean, brothers squabble a lot.
We never got into fist fights. We were always very cordial. We'd wrestle a lot, like, playfully.
Yeah.
But I was always significantly bigger than my brother.
Oh, okay. So that means...
You know, so I'd always come out on top. And then, when we were at our dad's house, we'd wrestle on the couch, as little boys do.
Of course.
And as soon as I got him in a hold, you know, he's like, I got you. He's like, Daddy, 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 Daddy. And our dad will walk. He's like, hey, break that up, you two. Hey, get out of here. Buzzer-a-boo.
Different weight class.
Bumper-a-boopy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that was...
That sounds cool.
Yeah. That was cool for those brief moments in time. Mm-hmm. Everything else was no bueno.
No bueno.
It was a no bueno.
What was so challenging about it?
Well, you had to wear the crappy clothes. Mm-hmm. Like, the highest end clothes we could ever have was anything on sale at Sears.
Okay.
You know, and then, like, I didn't know how to defend myself at all. So
yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, the dyslexia, how would that affect you socially in school? Just in terms of...
That didn't play a big part.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever hassled me for being dyslexic, at least as far as I know.
Yeah.
The only bullying... I always got bullied by much older kids.
Oh, okay.
Significantly older.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I would be in grade 2 and grade 7 and 8 would just bully me. The little kid.
That makes no sense.
You know, and make me cry and run home crying. Like, a lot.
Oh, so this is a common occurrence.
Yeah. And this is the weird thing. This happened at every single house I went to. Every single school I went to.
Yeah.
The same pattern kept going on and on and on. It would just be a different group of older bullies. Every single school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always the same... It was almost like they were in cahoots.
Yeah.
It was
Organized bullying.
Organized bullying.
Make a little call to my buddy Jimmy over at Westside.
Jimmy,
I'm just letting you know that we got some fresh meat coming over to your elementary school.
Yeah, a little sensitive boy, Vito. I think you should give him the rundown. You know what I'm saying?
Would you describe yourself as a sensitive kid?
Oh, my God. I cry at the drop of a hat.
Really?
I was a big crier.
Really?
Yeah. I was always sensitive. I didn't know how to deal with my feelings. Mm-hmm. And so crying was a big thing. I didn't want to cry. It just kind of forced itself upon me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of left to... I was also a latchkey kid.
Okay.
For the most part. You know, and so left to my own devices.
Yeah, so you didn't really have, like, you didn't have the issues of helicopter parents at all.
No. Oh, my God, left alone. No. They didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
That's what I remember, especially as school went on. So we moved to Cloverdale, BC, Canada, into the final elementary in the house we stayed in for quite a long time. And, yeah, I just remember days and days on end of just being alone in the house. Brother would have lots of friends. I'd have no friends.
Okay.
And just watching TV, just wasting time away.
Wow.
You know, that's
it. Doesn't sound overly, it sounds, I mean, if you could describe it in one word, how would you describe that period of time?
Lonely.
Oh, okay.
Lonely is the predominant word.
Okay. And I mean, to kind of wrap up that elementary school period, if there was one thing you could go back and change or one thing that you'd want as that kid, what would you change?
That's tough.
So I'm here for.
Because I don't like looking back and like, oh, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe there's, you know, somebody out there.
Couple things. I had actual, like, decent clothes to wear.
Okay.
And B, huge, that my mom wouldn't give me haircuts.
Okay.
My mom cut my hair.
Yeah.
She did not know how to cut hair. She was not about to spend money on a haircut.
Okay, so.
And so that was embarrassment time.
Yeah.
I would refuse to. What? Oh, headphones.
Very good.
I would have refused to get a haircut. And I would just wait and wait and wait because I didn't want my mom to give me a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did, I'd be horrified. I'd cry because it was so bad. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be shipped off to school. Here you go. Wow. Brand new haircut.
Crazy.
There you go.
That sounds terrifying. So what I'm hearing from everything you just said, though, is that as a kid, you thought that how you looked was really important.
Yeah, because you don't want to be the poor kid at school. I was already like overweight.
Yeah.
And now I'm the poor kid.
Okay. Yeah. So
you don't want to be that
part of it was just you didn't want to stick out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the
main thing. You want to blend in and be with the cool kids, and because the cool kids had new clothes and yada yada yada.
Yeah,
you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just like it makes you an easier target just to be the odd looking kid out.
Is that how you felt about it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there was always something weird with me because I was in special ed and wore these poor people clothes and didn't have money for lunches. And I carry my lunch in a Safeway bag.
Yeah.
That was my main backpack.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a nice backpack. Yeah,
and I half the time didn't eat.
Wow.
What my parents gave me.
Really?
Yeah, because I fucking hated it. Ever since at an early age, I was a finicky eater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to eat crappy food.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've kind of carried that along.
I carried that. It's a refinement. But, yeah, I just eat, like, the granola bar out of my bag and maybe the apple and then let the rest of it rot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it sounds kind of as if it's a tumultuous start in a way. You go school to school. You're getting bullied.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty lonely. You have these little glimmering glimpses of just goodness. And then you have to get into even more complexity through adolescence and your teenage years. So how did you transition into that? I mean, just going through puberty sounds like it might have been a little even more challenging than it would have been for other kids.
Oh, it was great. It was just great. I mean that fully ironically.
Really?
No, I mean seriously, it was great. Oh man, I was James Dean. You know, my age, my grade 7, I was James Dean.
Oh,
baby.
Yeah?
Ooh, smoking cigarettes.
Your hand.
Yeah. Drinking a hard scotch.
Yeah.
No, that's fucking ironic. Irony. I hit puberty. I started, you know, noticing girls at like grade 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just got more intense as time went along. So mm-hmm. like when I'm in high school, I was the kid who had to have the books in front of him as he walked down the hallways.
Oh,
I was that kid every day. Every day. I couldn't get up, you know, unannounced. Mm-hmm. Or anything, because I'd be constantly having a boner all the time. I'd just be like,
I don't know how we got to boners, but hey, we're here.
It's just a funny note. Like, I'd be in science class and like, this is the atom. And I'm like, huh, I saw Becky's underwear. Oh no, I'd look at the clock and like, I got 2 minutes to get rid of this boner. Don't get a boner. Don't get a boner.
Wow.
Sometimes it's just like, books in front of me. Here we go.
I suppose that'd be a very natural reaction to maybe a kid who's kind of looking for a distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it would be a lot more appealing to look at that than, you know, look at other things that were going on.
I think that was just a natural instinct.
Really?
Like, I couldn't, it was compulsive.
Oh, okay.
Like, I couldn't even help myself.
Yeah.
We've discussed on the podcast how crazy my libido is.
Yeah.
And true. Just imagine me as a teenager, just with an even crazier libido.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I had no idea how to even talk to a girl. So in high school,
well, imagine it'd be really overwhelming.
Well, the only female or woman I got to talk to, other than teachers, but you never thought of teachers as a guy or a girl or a woman, or I should say, you just that's the teacher. They're almost genderless.
I disagree, but okay.
Well, that kind of changed when the 23-year-old student teacher.
Well, we
come in. One of those showed up in my biology class. I'm like, fuck.
Okay.
But other than that, I bet they're all like 60 or something. They're all older.
Yeah, a lot of the teachers are older. Yeah, that's fair.
So the only like role model is female wise was my mom, and she was an absolute just a mess. Mm-hmm. You know, me and a couple people hypothesized that she might have been undiagnosed bipolar.
Okay.
So she just had go from moments of like, oh, you're the best ever. You're the best son in the grade. She's like, just absolute rage and chaos and screaming and stuff. And you didn't know when it was going to happen. You just here's the thing. Like, when I say I didn't learn to defend myself, it's because I was afraid to, because if I ever stepped out of line at home, I get yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
If I stepped in line, I might get yelled at.
Yeah.
There was no consistency in it. Like, I sometimes like, can I have an allowance? What the hell are you talking about? You always nag me. And just get a yelling match.
Oh, my. Like, so it sounds like your mother was one of the primary females. And now you find this fascination or attraction to the opposite sex, and I mean, were you scared, or like, how did you feel about even approaching women? Since,
well, there was no approaching, there's zero.
Was it? But what held you back?
Well, fear,
of course, right?
You know, but you can say that about just about any teenage boy.
Yeah, I mean, but based on your experiences with women,
they appeared to be horrific monsters that I wanted to fuck.
Yeah.
Like, it was that dichotomy. Like, I was so deathly afraid of upsetting a woman.
It's Godzilla.
All. Like, Gazira. petrified. Like, I just, eggshells. The worst thing a girl could say to me is like, you know, like, you know, you suck. That would break my, that would just break me in two.
Really?
Yeah. Just negative feedback from women just was the be all end all.
Okay.
But
so were there interactions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Besides teachers and
besides teachers.
And...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. There was that because in grade school, mm-hmm. and from a very early age, I had a very crazy imagination mm-hmm. that my parents never noticed whatsoever.
It seems impossible, but okay.
It seems impossible, but it's true. Yeah. So I was the class clown immediately. Like, I had no attention at home. Mm-hmm. I was starved for attention. I wanted attention. No one paid attention to me. I was often home alone. Mm-hmm. I was a latchkey kid. Yeah. So I just developed comedic talent.
Yeah, of course.
Which started off as just cringe. And then eventually became humorous as you develop the skills because it's a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
And you just become a clown.
So socially, that was how you adapted to this situation.
I was just like, I can make girls laugh and entertain them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't like, hey, want to hang out? Like that's not on the table.
No.
That's not a discussable opportunity.
Yeah, of course.
It was more like, be a goof. Do any favor they asked, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, pray and hope.
Yeah.
Pray and hope.
Wow. That sounds really tough.
And I got really good at, you know, being a class clown. Like, I'm very good at just making women laugh and smile. It's mm-hmm. it's innate to me. But ask them out or turning on the charm or getting serious, out of the course.
So your home life didn't really change at that point at all?
No, didn't change one iota.
Yeah,
I go to my dad's and that was the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only place I got to like really play video games and mm-hmm. eat pizza and watch movies. That like, I'm a huge movie buff because of that. Like mm-hmm. That was my safety. That was my biggest enjoyment. You know, a lot of my life was just watching movies. You know, movies, watching Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme, stuff like that. Those are my idols. Those were the
so
happy.
That's
times.
Actually where I was going to go. Is who were your idols and why were they your idols back then?
Unconsciously, the idols were those big action heroes.
Okay.
Consciously, Jim Carrey.
Okay.
Like Jim Carrey was big at
yeah,
the time.
Totally.
I saw Ace Ventura. I'm like, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like that reminded me of me.
Okay.
Like I wanted to be that. Like,
okay.
I like the animation and the characters and, you know, like,
Yeah.
You
totally.
Know, like,
well, he's amazing. He's so good.
He's amazing. That was me. I wanted to be that mm-hmm. so bad.
Okay.
Like, and Robin Williams even a little, but mostly Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And again, you know, parents never caught on to that. They never mm-hmm. like, I mean, I had parents never, yeah, parents never caught on to any of my actual interests. They never asked me like, what are you really interested in? What do you really want to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, what do you want to do for a living? Be a wrestler? No, you can't be a wrestler. You can be a fisherman. Okay. I'll be a fisherman.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Right. You know,
that's good. So there wasn't really that much actual discourse.
No, they were almost like just absent. Like I would, you know, it's another thing is I was home alone so much. My brother had all the friends. He was a cutie patootie,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Cutie patootie.
I think my mom said that.
Really?
Yeah. He had curls for the girls.
Ooh.
Curly hair for the girls.
Oh, yeah. Curly hair.
Yeah, he was a super cute Aww. Little guy and he invited all the spin the bottle parties
Ooh.
And stuff. So I'd be home alone.
And watching?
Just daytime TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some of my...
So would you say you were partially raised by television?
I was absolutely raised by television.
Okay.
All my morals and ideas and of what it meant to be youth or a man or what women were, everything was TV.
So how do you think that affected you?
It completely fucked up my reality. I had no concept of what the real world was.
Mm-hmm. And because you were such an introvert, it made it even more difficult.
Yeah. Like, I remember many times I spent entire summer vacations alone in the house by myself. Just entire summer vacations. I never stepped out of the house.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. There'd be entire summer vacations where the only time I stepped out of the house was to go to my dad's place.
Mm-hmm.
So I just woke up, watched TV.
And this was even during high school?
Yep.
So this was a... Mm-hmm. So the same loneliness that you had in your elementary school times just carried over.
Carried on. Yeah. Because friends were very temporary. I didn't develop more significant kinds of friends till like later half of high school.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also where like the loneliest actually, and I was always hungry and we were kind of semi-poor.
Yeah.
You know, I learned to cook.
That's great.
Like, it was a handy. I learned to bake the shit. I learned to cook every single cookie in a cookie book.
Really?
Yeah.
So you know how to cook.
I know how to cook and bake and cookies because we had ingredients for food, but we didn't have food. So I just like, okay, do we have this? We have this. Oh, I'm going to make these and then make those and then I eat them all.
Yeah.
It just made me a bigger fat kid. You know.
So when did you start turning the tide, becoming, you described part of your elementary.
The turning the tide.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, I was regular size, and then I became super size, or I became extra large, or I became...
It was a steady progression.
Okay.
Like, it just continued to progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think 260 in high school is the biggest
I
was.
Consequently, I got to the same weight.
Yeah, it's funny.
260,
265. Yeah. Oh, man. And I was so shamed of my weight. Like, I really hated being big.
Oh, okay.
Like, I really...
Was it pointed out at that point?
Yeah. There were some upfront approaches about my weight, and there were some, you know, what I had, the stories in my head.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to love you when you're fat. No one likes you when you're fat.
I got this. I felt the same way.
Those consequences, I remember one of the most just really fucked up things to do to a kid was when we visited my grandparents. And normally I love visiting my grandparents because they lived on the beach and my dad, grandfather was a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually go fishing a lot. I remember as a kid, he made me read an article. Let me just preface this. I didn't really learn to read till maybe grade 10 or 11.
Okay.
So this is many years before that. My grandfather pulls out a little article he snipped out of the newspaper about diabetes and forced me to read it as a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, read this. You got to watch yourself. Like, I'm just a kid. I don't know any better.
No, you wouldn't know any better.
It was just like, oh, wow. There's no love here.
Were your grandparents involved at all, like, throughout that time?
So my grandparents lived over in the island.
Okay.
So we'd visit them maybe once, twice a year. And I fucking couldn't wait because I loved fishing.
Oh, awesome.
So much. And it was in the ocean and you get a boat ride. And it was just... No talking. I was just like fishing. It was meditative.
Okay.
And you saw the roots of my mother's kind of chaoticness in my grandparents.
So this was your mother's parents then?
Yeah.
For the most part?
My dad's grandparents were off in Italy.
Never saw them. Okay. So only one side.
Yeah. I only dealt with my mother's side of the family ever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my grandmother was pretty much a tyrant. She was the head of the household. Oh. Really cracked a whip and really, you know, was that my grandfather for the most part was kind of a goof.
Oh, okay.
You know, he loved to goof around or sneak around and whatnot.
I wonder who carried that trait.
Yeah, yeah, but in more innocent way. Like, he wasn't like a dumb goof.
Just playful.
You know, let's go for some ice cream. Don't tell your grandmother.
Okay? Oh, that sounds fun.
That's fun.
That's cool.
Grandma'd always find out.
Of course. Yeah. And then what?
Team of ninjas, you know, spying on people.
It's a spy network.
You know, but there was, you know, the one also predominant theme throughout my entire childhood is no concept of love. There was no love.
Okay. What is love to you? I mean, that definition.
I don't even know.
Even now?
Yeah. I have no idea what love is.
Mm-hmm.
It was never a thing in our family. There was caring.
Okay.
It's never love. And there was a lot of evidence to show me that people, that what I might have thought to be love was definitely not love. It was just caring.
So,
a good example. Like, you would think your grandparents love you, right?
Yeah.
That's usually they're big and they love their grandchildren, this and that. Me and my brother, we were the least favorite of our grandparents' favorites.
So you're the least, yeah.
Yeah, my mom was the black sheep of the family.
Okay.
And she thought she didn't know how to raise kids. And she thought me and my brother were just trash.
Really? You know?
And this was never said. This was just implied through their actions. And a good example was my parents would come visit over the mainland, visit all my cousins and take my cousins out hunting and this and that, and not even stop by.
Really?
They would just come to the mainland, hang out with the cousins and hang out with my mom's sisters and everything like that, and just leave.
They wouldn't see your mom?
No.
Interesting.
No. They did not think highly of your mom.
Do you have any concept of why it was like that?
I have no idea. To this day, just no idea.
Your mom never talked about the relationships?
Mom talked about a lot of things that weren't great.
Okay.
You know, one, she told me that constantly, these stories of the kind of biased things my grandparents did to her, did to us, how they didn't really care for my mom or us kids as much as our other cousins and stuff like that. And then, like, my mom just, all she did was complain.
Oh, okay.
You know, and tell, like, you know, she doesn't get respect and this and that and yada, 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 yada. And plus on top of the chaos and the screaming and this and that and the, you know, just.
Was there truth to any of that, or?
Truth as in.
Like into any of her complaints, you figure?
Yeah. I mean, it's truthful in that it actually happened.
Yeah.
But not in that it's all somebody else's fault.
Okay.
That kind of truth.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
So, yeah, it was just brutal.
Okay, yeah. So you turned the tide.
So I turned
260.
60?
260.
260, yeah.
260.
Yeah, 260. Those are numbers.
Yes.
Yes.
In pounds, of course.
So I remember one of the biggest impacts of my life in those early years is when we were in grade 7. This is going back a little bit.
Yeah.
And we took a tour of the high school we were going to go to.
Okay.
And I remember seeing that weight room.
Cool.
And I was captivated. I was like, what? I was called to those weights.
Really?
From an early age.
Okay.
Because I idolized the big muscle heroes, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, of course.
Those guys, totally reasonable. Because to me, those were what men are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what men do. That's what men look like. And if I want to be a man, especially you're hitting puberty, girls love those guys.
Yeah,
of course. They have to love those guys.
Because they're the best characters.
Those are the only guys women will like.
Yeah, you have to be the hero.
Yeah, you have to be the hero. And that's, I'm like, that's what called me to those weights. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the courage to actually, like, step into the weight room, like, during a lunch break or after school till, like, grade 10.
Mm-hmm.
But once I did, that's all I thought about. That's all I focused on was just working out all the time, every day. That's it. I became completely obsessed because I had this vision in my head that if I look like the heroes I idolized,
yeah,
my life would be fixed. That was the story
that you told yourself.
That I told myself.
Of course.
So I was obsessed. Like, I mean, no pain, no gain, no matter what, every day, rain or shine, hurt, no hurt, just obsessed. Lunch breaks, after schools, da-da-da, at home, during summer.
So you literally, just from my understanding, what you're saying is you, when you jumped into the gym, it just became an obsession right away.
Yeah. It was the only thing that gave me purpose.
And hope, I would imagine.
Yeah. Because the other things in school, like I took chef class and I was like one of the top students. I took ComTech or AV or the, you know, video, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like the top student.
Oh.
You know, I really love those. But the gym was the clearest vision of hope I had in my life. That's all I wanted.
So you're in a way working out to live.
Yeah, I'm working out to live.
You're fighting for your life in a way. Yeah.
It's like I so didn't want to be who I was. And I so wanted just those things in life. I wanted to be popular. I wanted a girlfriend. I mm-hmm. wanted, you know, the fame, the fortune. Like, I wanted a life because my regular life wasn't a fucking life.
Yeah.
You know, even the, you know, grade 10 is when I, like, kind of got actual friends. They were very conditional.
Oh, okay.
You know,
can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah. So I remember, I think it was in 10 or 11. The guy sat beside me in science class. Yeah, he was a skateboarder. I'm like, hey, man, I've always wanted a skateboard. It's like, oh, yeah? Well, just, you know, come over to my house, you know, after school and, like, teach you how to skateboard. I'm like, okay.
Sweet.
And that's cool. And that is just carried on after there. And, like, hung out. You know, he was the popular kid in our skater group
okay.
of people, you know. And that's what his house was, where all the kids congregated. All mm-hmm. of them. So I was, like, in the hub of it. And I'm like, oh, cool. I have friends and I know people and I got somewhere to hang out with. You know, that's what I thought. You okay. know, even taller, and I even like got the courage to ask my mom for a skateboard for my birthday.
Okay.
I had to have courage for that.
And?
I got yelled at hard.
Rough.
For a skateboard for my birthday.
Yeah, you don't get birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Birthday? No. No. How
really?
Dare you be so selfish to ask for a skateboard really? For your birthday?
That's what
yeah,
she said?
I got... I basically almost got threatened. Like, you better fucking... Well, she didn't swear, but yeah. you better use the skateboard. I spent good money on the skateboard. You better... I want to see you
so
use
you,
it.
So you did get one eventually.
Yeah, I got one. I just had to tolerate traumatic yelling.
So it was conditional.
It was conditional. But I loved it. I was the world's worst skateboarder.
You
like,
don't
I'll
say.
Sign an autograph. You hand me a 10x10 glossy of my face with a skateboard, mm-hmm. and I will sign it world's worst skateboarder. I was that guy. Because I was a big guy.
Yeah,
top
course.
Heavy. I'm unbalanced. I'm uncoordinated. I'm better on the ground than on a skateboard.
Yeah.
But I thought I had friends.
Okay.
You know, there was...
So something changed? When you say I thought I had friends,
yeah.
it almost
so
insinuates...
those friends were completely conditional.
Okay.
Because I was the friend that they would call as a last resort. Like, man, I'm bored. Let's call Vito.
Oh, like, I see.
I remember one friend calling me, and this is his opening line. And like, I, you know, ring, ring. Hey, hello? It's like, oh, Vito, I've called literally everyone. You're the last person. Like, do you want to hang out? Like, sure. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Of course.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, I'm like, I'm the last person you would call to hang out.
Yeah.
And as soon as girls got involved in the group, they did not invite me.
Oh.
I had a bad reputation amongst the girls.
Really?
Yeah.
What was your rap with the girls?
They thought I called them, like, mean names when they were drunk.
Oh, okay.
Like, everyone would be drunk. I didn't drink. I didn't drink till I was legal age to drink.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Because I was that kind of
straight
annoyed.
Now. Yeah.
And they thought I called them, like, one girl drunken whore. I'm like, first of all, you know, I wouldn't say the word whore.
Yeah.
And why would I
oh, that's
would I
so,
call a girl a drunken whore?
Like, that seems like it would be terrifying
why
for
would
you
I,
at that point.
I didn't have the balls to even upset a girl.
Yeah.
So if any instance involved the girls, they would just like, Vito should probably stay home. Like, we're, you know, like I'd be over after school over at their house on a Friday. And they're like, well, we're going to go hang out with the girls. Yeah, they don't want you around, Vito.
That's really?
Yeah.
They would use those words?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me understand this. You had a mother that made it difficult to trust girls to start with, yeah. And then you became more of an entertainment piece. Yeah. And then at some point there was some kind of misunderstanding, yeah. And you were pretty much ostracized from the whole group. Mm-hmm. That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say that's awful.
It fucking sucked. You know, but had my gym.
Okay.
Had my gym.
Can I actually take a couple steps back? Because
yeah.
There was one thing, and I think it's really cool to talk about, is I remember you were telling me about you had some form of a mentor in one of your classes, and you didn't have quite the mentor at home, but I feel like you did have this little sparkling story or person that I remember you mentioning that you felt almost as if he cared about you more than you even knew.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting time, like just bizarre. So I started working out during lunch, after school, every day, like 2 days. And the metal shop teacher would work out after school.
Cool.
And he'd be the teacher that supervised us to open up the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And over several months, kind of got comfortable and we started interacting.
Cool.
You know, and then we slowly started becoming friends, and then I would start hanging out with him. You know, it was like, well, is a high school teacher hanging out with a young, impressionable boy?
Yeah, it seems a little
bit
odd.
It sounds like Batman.
Oh, yeah?
Finding his ward. No, he took, in retrospect, a lot of sympathy on me because he knew about my background. And I remember at one point, like many years later, this is much after high school and in my 20s, he told me that when he met me, first of all, I was a dick because I was very like, you know, guarded. I didn't want people to get close to me. Like it's just,
yeah,
you know, if you got too close, I'll bite you back.
Yeah.
You know, don't corner. But he like he was flabbergasted at how horrid a job my parents were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like he had two kids and a wife and it was like an actual family. Like he actually loved his kids and his wife was actually a good wife.
Yeah.
I was like bizarre. And he like just like, fuck, I need to help this kid. Like he could not believe how bad of a job.
So this you said this, he told you this even a decade
many years
after?
Many years later.
Do you guys still keep in touch?
No. Oh, okay. It's a shame, and I really should.
And I mean, I guess whole... just to like get the audience involved though, I mean, how was he impactful during that time?
So we became friends and we started becoming workout buddies.
Okay.
You know, and he encouraged me to pursue working out and learning, like, hey, here's a magazine I used to read.
Oh, that's cool.
Working Out magazine, and start buying the little bits of money I had, I would spend on bodybuilding magazines.
Okay.
That was the only money I had. I had $10 a month buying a bodybuilding magazine. Yes.
Awesome.
And he would, like, we'd work out together, and he'd try to teach me life. And he would invite me over for dinners, you know, he would invite me to his family camping trips.
Wow.
Like he was like probably the most, picturesque man of what a man should be. Like he had his shit together. He was a teacher. He did some real estate, you know, he bought a cabin. He worked with his hands. He could build anything. Like he loved his kids, he took care, he you know, stood up for himself when he needed to. He was, you know, he knew how to love when he needed love. It was great. You know, like I would help him fix up the cabin.
Cool.
You know, like 8-hour drive, we'd really? Do that. But the whole time I was unaware of how good of a role model he was.
Yeah, of course.
And later we'd talk about this, like how I just didn't want to listen. I was there for the ride, but I didn't want to absorb the teachings.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of inadvertently floundered on this opportunity I was given. You know, I didn't know it was opportunity at the time to start learning, you know, how to be a proper adult, even though he really, really tried to help. I just push back all the time.
What do you think precipitated really the pushback?
I don't really know. I had a lot of anger and frustration, you know, and like, you know, I had no outlet. I was not allowed to have working. I was the only outlet I had for any anger.
Yeah.
You know, and like I couldn't rebel at home because I didn't want to get yelling and this and that. And yeah, it was that was the only outlet. Just a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, and it couldn't be released. And
what was a lot of your anger directed toward?
Well, obviously, you know, one could say my mom and the family upbringing. You know, and just life just not going my way. Like, you know.
Well, it sounds like you started to realize in your high school years that chips were down.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, I'm looking around. Everyone is like partying and having friends and experimenting and getting relationships. And I'm like stuck at home, you know, playing PlayStation.
Yeah.
You know, or working out. And that's my life.
Yeah. With the hope that if you worked out enough that you would
that
get somewhere.
I would have that life. You know? Yeah. That I could have that life, you know, and I felt my years just drifting away.
Yeah.
Like high school, like I'm like, fuck, I wanted to have a high school life. You know, like I wanted to experiment and have, you know, date a girl and have sex and stuff like that. And it just never happened. I just, you know, spent all my time in the gym just keep going, you know, like, and that was it. You know, my friends, like, you know, this teacher was the only, like, true friend.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, he was there thick and thin. Even though, like, even at points, he get fucking frustrated. I mean, like, fuck, come on.
Yeah.
You know? And there's only so much he could do. He had a life and a family and this and that to take on, like, basically adopt a kid. Mm-hmm. Almost, in a way.
I mean, yeah. It's interesting. One thing I'm kind of hearing is that as a kid who basically got used to a patterns of just dysfunction, the concept of even trying to get out of it might even be really foreign to you.
Yeah, that's one thing I've really come to realize now is I wouldn't know peace and happiness if it hit me in the face as a child. And I would purposely run away from it if it presented itself. Like
that makes
the
sense.
The chaos and the dysfunction was just so ingrained as normal. Anything beyond normal, it was scary and frightening.
Questionable, yeah.
Yeah, and peace and love was like, ooh, oh, fuck, no.
Terrifying.
Totally.
Terrifying.
You gravitate to what you know and chaos and loneliness.
Do you think any other people tried to reach you? And?
No, it was just him.
Because it was just, I thought it was really interesting because I remember when I was young, there's certain people I just wouldn't talk to just because I wouldn't even entertain the thought of, I'm just relating myself. Mm-hmm. So you get into the gym, high school is kind of a blur. It's just like intermittent times at the gym with class, which is kind of seems more on the vanilla side, coming home, doing very little.
Yep.
And then, so high school ends, you're still working out.
Yeah, so high school ends, and because I built this friendship with the metal shop teacher in the high school, I still went to that high school gym.
Oh, cool.
After high school.
That's cool.
And I just floundered around working out. And then I remember the metal shop teacher, just one day, like, Vita, what are you going to do for your life?
Oh, it's point blank.
Yeah, just like, what are you going to do for your life? And I just look at him, oh, I wanted to. I wanted to be a bunch of things. I wanted to be a chef at one point, but you know, I wanted to be a pro wrestler at one point, but everyone threw that idea in the trash.
Yeah,
you know, I wanted to be a filmmaker, but everyone, you know, my parents threw that idea in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's like, and I, and important part, I was already like helping kids. You know, kids would approach me like, "Hey, can you train me?" Because, you know, I remember I lost a lot of weight during one summer.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting thing. One summer, my mom bought Windsor Pilates.
Okay.
She never used them at all. The tapes.
Yeah.
And I had some, these boxing gloves. And a kid showed me a couple just kickboxing type moves and stuff like that. So one summer, all I did, and I had no friends. So I had one summer all to myself.
Okay.
All I did every day, I woke up, I put a 2 liter of water, you know, on my desk, and I would do Windsor Pilates and shadow kickboxing.
Whoa.
For hours. Hours. And I would stretch and stretch and stretch and just shadow box and Windsor Pilates all day, every single day. And I came, went back to school, and everyone's like, "Whoa, you lost a lot of fucking weight." Well, I did. Well,
did, how much? Did you know how much?
No, no idea.
That was what, senior year or?
Close to senior. I think I'm in grade 11 and whatnot. But and kids were approaching me to train them, and I was like one of the strongest kids in school and stuff like that. And I remember even after high school, kids were still approaching me to help them train. And I remember one of the highlights is two kids want me to train them, and we worked out together, and you know, I was studying everything about working out.
Oh yeah,
I could find everything.
Yeah, you were you're pretty. I was obsessed. Yeah, your information base on working out is pretty good.
Yeah, maybe too obsessed.
It's possible,
maybe. So I remember these two kids, and I was training them and working them and pushing them, and we'd all be working out together and stuff like that. And they auditioned for the football team, the first football team at that high school. And like, they were star players.
Amazing.
They're when they did the tryouts, they were top.
That's amazing.
You know, I didn't get one fucking thank you. this is weird. And even what, this is weird. The one kid I trained for, you know, couple years, he went on, and he even asked me after high school to keep writing programs, mm-hmm. and just to keep helping him.
Wow.
He later became a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And actually opened up his own personal training studio.
Wow.
It's like,
and you kind of grandfathered.
I had an element of helping in that.
Yeah.
That's fucking up. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, never got to see him or see the gym or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so my metal shop teacher, like, "What the fuck are you going to do for your life?"
Whoa.
It's like, you like training, you like working out, you like helping people a lot. Become a personal trainer. That was my, any time a difficult question was posed to me, this is my go-to. See how good I am.
It's like, I don't
second
know.
Second nature. And the butt shoulders and go up and like Scooby-Doo. And he's like, "No, Vito, you're becoming a personal trainer." No, Vito, you're becoming.
That's amazing.
He's on his computer in the classroom. All right. Personal training. Oh, hey, there's a YMCA like down the road. Oh, let's call him up. Hey, what kind of personal training programs do you have? I got a young man who wants to enroll. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Bye. Click. So, Vito, tell your parents that you're taking this basic theory personal training course at the YMCA Thursday at 8 o'clock, and it's this much. Go tell your parents this.
What?
Yeah. Go tell you, give this to your parents, and I've already enrolled you. You're already signed up. Here you are.
Wow.
Tell your parents to do the rest.
Okay.
And I just, I'm supposed to give this to you guys? And they're like, "Oh, okay." Oh, okay.
All right.
My parents, when they saw me working out, they actually, like, you know, because of the weight issue, shaming and stuff, like, they actually wanted me to
work out. They endorsed it.
They endorsed the idea of personal training. That seemed like in the scope and realm of things I could do.
And it's acceptable.
It was acceptable. Being a wrestler, a filmmaker, or, you know, was not acceptable in my family. It's too difficult.
Of course.
For such a lame person like me.
Yeah,
it's not creative at all.
Your family doesn't do those kinds of things.
Not gifted or creative at all when it comes to entertainment. Yeah, and then that's the next thing I know. Like, I start taking these courses, my basic theory. And,
interesting, okay.
And at the YMCA, and my stepdad gets me a membership there, and then I stop working out at the school weight room, and I start working out at the YMCA.
Cool.
Early in the morning.
Nice.
And so for maybe a year or two, my parents would wake up. I drive my brother and this person that was staying at our house to school.
Okay.
Because that was my job. And when my parents went to work, one of them would drop me off at the YMCA early in the morning. And I go there and I would work out for 4 or 5 hours.
Not surprised.
I would just be in the gym, and I made friends with a lot of people in the gym and a lot of the staff there, because I was taking the courses.
And you're taking so much time there.
Taking the courses and stuff like that, and just learning and training. And I was that crazy person in the gym that I had a piece of paper and a pen, and I write down every set, weight, rep, bam. You know, for months, I had a piece of paper. That was my God. Like, you know, like, I put it, like, that machine, I'm working on a machine. You see my paper? Yeah. Yeah, so I just tracked numbers and this and that, and I got into really crazy core conditioning, like balance training was in vogue, and
oh, yeah.
I was really into that. I was like doing squats on the exercise big Swiss ball.
Yeah.
I was doing squats. Every Wednesday was core day, and I'd spend like 3 hours doing various balancing things, like stuff like I got to a point where I could do a plank with 3 Swiss balls.
Oh,
so one under my feet and one on each arm, and then start doing push-ups.
Wow.
Yeah. And then be able to do like crunches and scissors.
Crazy stuff.
The craziest fucking stuff. I was like, what the fuck got into me?
Well, I mean, part of you, I think, just wanted to hit that like pinnacle. You thought that there'd be like a end to it.
Yeah.
That would be really nice.
Yeah. I got down to like 220, you know, and I just plateaued, and I could not break it, like, for the life of me.
Really?
Yeah. It's just a sticking point. I couldn't figure it out. Like,
were you pretty lean at that point?
No, still a good amount of chub.
Yeah.
I was just working out like an animal. And strong. Yeah. Yeah. Just really ridiculously strong.
Yeah. It's amazing what you do when you just take the time to get in there and do the work.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be that scientific at that point.
And all while I'm just taking the courses and focusing on training, absorbing as much knowledge, and people ask me to help them out, or, you know, I'd like, even like some people I just train, like, hey, can you train me? It's like, sure.
Okay. Cool.
You know, and I'd almost make grown men weep with the intensity of my workouts, because I train them the way I would train.
Yeah, of course.
She's fucking mad. Like a madman. And then, like, occasionally girls would talk to me. And I, like, there was this...
So what age is this?
It's like 18, okay. 19.
Yeah.
You know, even girls would talk to me, help them work out or whatnot. It was bizarre. Like,
bizarre.
It was,
I like,
bizarre because I didn't understand why a girl would be talking to me.
Well, yeah, you're the arch nemesis.
Yeah. Like, I did not see myself as having any value for a woman to ever interact with.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought totally I was absolute ugly. And just worthless to.
I could see how that would work. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, when a girl will talk to me, I'm like,
huh?
Why would she talk to me? What bizarre. Like, and I tell, like, you know, one of the guys, I'm like, why is this weird? This girl's talking to me. I don't get it. I was like, dude, just enjoy it. Yeah, but I just don't understand why they would talk to me. You know, I still remember there's this much older cougar woman with big fake tits that Alice made to help her out in really weird positions and never clued in. Yeah, it just me at the YMCA for just great. And but then it became a time. Hey, got a good job. You know, I got my weight trainer certificate, so I'm, you know, quote unquote, able to work at a gym. You don't need fucking anything to work at a gym, but
no.
I was in the process of, and, you know, had tried to help get people to help me build a resume because I was, you know, still fairly illiterate.
Yeah.
You know, and
so had you worked a job yet at that point?
I did. Oh, we grazed over that period where my mom got me into construction.
Oh, okay.
Fuck, man. If you ever want to make a deeply creative, emotional person commit suicide, put them in construction.
Sounds awful.
This is me in construction. I want to die. Fuck, I wish I would die.
Really?
Like, every day. Every day.
So you're like, this is literal.
It was hell. Hell. Cause
how long did that last?
A couple of years.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of years. I got laid off, fired from one gig. Then the mail shop teacher, like, oh, my buddy is building a house, so you should go help him as a laborer and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't want to. It's like, dude, you need a job. Get a fucking job. I'm like, okay. Just, I did what people told me to do.
Yeah.
They have, you know, my own.
You weren't really taught to have your own compass with things.
Yeah, I wasn't taught to.
Or told that you have even a sense of your own good judgment.
Yeah. Eventually, I was like fired from that job because I wasn't hustling enough and this and that. And,
I didn't like the
people. I didn't like to drink, so I wouldn't drink with people after the gig. And I had a boss who would literally drink and drive. Literally be drinking and driving at the same time.
Oh.
He was my boss.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And my mom, like, after the fact, like, oh, shit, I didn't realize I. Ooh, okay, sorry. Like,
oh.
Thanks. A little late for that. But no one realized, like, I suffered bouts of depression ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Like, I would just have these existential crises and just stay awake for hours on end, just hating my life and just, you know. Just wishing it would all end, you know. So, like, mean construction was just, I wanted to kill myself every fucking day. Just nonstop. Just, I fucking want to die. Again. And no one noticed. No one cared. No one noticed. No one, like, you know, hey, how you feeling? They just were like, hey, how you doing? I was like, I fucking hate it. Yeah, well, you know, and tough it up. Just do it.
Pretty consistent response. Pretty,
no one cared about my feelings.
You got paid, so.
I got paid minimum wage, you know, to haul 2x4s and 2x10s all day. You know, like, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, those are good times. But back to the training, you know, and all while this, like, I'm still, like, you know, horny as fuck and trying, like, wanting to have an interaction with a girl that's more than just being a clown or a dancing monkey, as I call it, and just being heartbroken again and again when a girl like that. Because I thought that when you make a girl like laugh hysterically and smile and when she would say to you like, oh my God, you're so amazing. You're so awesome. Like, I love having you around. You would think that meant that she was interested in you. They were never interested in me.
Okay.
They would just love the fact that I would be this dancing monkey. And then I, like, you know, try to, like, like you. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm going to go fuck Ian over there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I just go home and cry. Yeah, that was the repeating pattern. So everything outside of the gym was just fucking painful. Like, I hated it. Like, the gym was my church. It was, I called it my mistress. It was the only, it was the closest thing to a relationship I had was that gym. The gym was my girlfriend.
Till what age?
Mid-20s. No, like 22.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so like from 15 to 22, that was my girlfriend, the gym.
And then what changed?
So when eventually got, you know, ready to put my resume out there, you know, I handed it all these places and stuff like that, and only two places ever called me. I handed my resume like 18 gyms.
Okay.
Just to work the front desk. Two places really? Called me back.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. One called me back, but they wanted me as a sales rep.
Like, of course.
No, at Fitness World.
Of course. They'll take anyone.
They'll take anyone. Luckily, another gym, a mom and pop, like, hey, you know, you want to be a personal trainer? That's cool. Why don't you come down for an interview? And then I'm like, yeah, I want to be a personal trainer. It was a mom and pop. The wife was a fitness competitor, you know, professionally, and a personal trainer. The husband was like a prep coach and owned the gym, and they were like the nicest couple, and they gave me the job. And then I just worked there religiously, like all the time as a free membership. So I'd be there almost from opening to closing. You know,
that's dedication.
Yeah. Yeah. I like would, my shift, the gym would close at like 10 o'clock and I would start at like 4 o'clock, and then I would, but show up at noon to work out and then work and then walk home.
Wow.
Like I was like on it. And then, one of their employees was an absolute fucking just liked drugs and partying more than working. And so there were a couple shifts where I still remember I worked an opening to closing shift. From 5 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And then I had a little break to go work out in between. And I did that for a couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, at that age, it's amazing.
That was my home, you know, and got to know people and talk to people. And, you know, I still had no human interactions.
What about the two owners? I mean, did you interact with them on
They totally were super supportive and wanted me to become a personal trainer. And even like they allowed me to train people kind of under the table before I got my getting my license, personal training license. And that's where I trained my first paying client and my second paying client. Yeah, it was fucking amazing.
That sounds super cool. You know?
And then things changed. Was another chapter.
Yes.
Was ahead.
So it sounds like how long was that golden era? I mean, that sounds like a really good time.
It was after high school to like 20 maybe.
Because it sounds like you took something that you were really 21. Passionate about and really just put all your effort into it, and it kind of manifested in this really cool job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was playing like, I discovered like World of Warcraft and MMOs, so I was playing that all the time. So if I was in the gym, I was playing video games.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, I was interacting with people online.
I remember those
that,
days.
That was my entire life, you know, just hanging out with, being friendly with the people in the gym and working out like a fucking maniac.
So how many years was that, though? A couple years, a few years, or?
I mean, I started working out like a maniac in high school.
But I mean that time when you worked at that place.
So like maybe year.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't very long.
Yeah. Yeah. Relatively.
And then you say something changed at the end.
So a big thing changed. New guy bought into the business.
Okay.
Okay. He shall remain nameless from Fair. Here. Don't even ask me after the podcast because I won't tell you.
Okay.
He, you know, it'll become clear in the story. He bought into the business. And so he was part owner, and this mom and pop were part owner, and they celebrated by buying a Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy came in the gym and he had swagger. He had it. Like he had the girls, he had the popularity. He was an entrepreneur. He owned his own supplement franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a part investor in a supplement company. Yeah. You know, and this guy was like, oozed cool. Like everyone's like, oh man, he's the coolest guy. It's It's like, ooh, I want to see that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he was like the guy. Like, I gravitated towards that guy, and he loved the attention. The idea of a young, impressionable guy doing whatever the fuck, you know, he said was so appealing to him. Someone that just groveled at his feet was just the most
What were your feelings about him?
At the time, I thought he was the coolest guy in the world. You know?
Because he represented a lot of those things that you were after.
He represented, like, all the cool stuff. He had the cool car. He had, you know, like, he was a 32-year-old guy that never dated a girl above the age of 20.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was cool, you know? He owned his own store. Like, he had the walk and the swagger and this and that. And he went to parties. He knew people.
So how did that affect your situation?
So he completely kiboshed my personal training. So I was a test away from getting my personal trainer's license.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely changed gears. And I started working with him at his supplement store right down the road. He's like, okay. Hey, man, why don't you come work with me? You could be a franchise owner, like own your own supplement store. And I'm like, I could be that cool.
This guy's he got you. Cool. He totally got me.
And the thing is, my metal shop teacher, mentor guy, like he's like, dude, I don't trust this guy. Like this does not sound. And I was like, nah, he's good, man. He's cool. Again, me not listening to who I should listen
to. So you left.
I left the gym. Started working at the supplement store.
Oh.
And I was a fucking mule for that guy.
Really?
I learned, and that's where my next chapter is, because I only have been studying like the fitness part, not the nutrition supplement part. And so I deep dived, started learning everything about supplements and nutrition and more training by him. Started getting, learning about like hardcore bodybuilding.
Yeah, of course.
Like, is a whole new chapter of learning, and I thought I was like, I'm gonna make this is what's gonna do it.
The next
this
step.
This is I'm gonna make it.
Yeah.
This guy, like, we driving his Corvette downtown Vancouver. Like, oh, I'm so cool.
Yeah. Aww.
Like, he talked to like the hottest girls in the club. Like, he's so cool. Oh my god.
So you idolized him a little bit.
I idolized the fuck out of him. So I did anything he wanted, which meant I was a fucking bitch. You know? Like, call it to myself.
Figuratively, yeah.
Yeah. And I would bust my ass. And he would take advantage of every little bit of it. You know, like, we had smoothie machines, protein smoothies. Like, hey, come after work and clean these. Not paid. Did it.
Really?
Happily.
Really?
Yeah. He had a dog at one point. Hey, Vito, I'm having a poker game later tonight. Can you clean up the dog shit upstairs? Yep. Hey, can you go pick me up lunch? Yep. Hey, go town. Go pick up my new business cards. Yep. Go do this. Yep. Go pack up this. Yep. Do this. Yep. Yep.
So there was you felt like there was almost an expectation there that he would lead you to this promised land.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had some investment superficially in my progression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gave me more responsibilities. Like, okay, like, you know, I would work double shifts all the time. I don't think he paid me an hour of overtime whatsoever. Because he was a party guy. He did coke and he loved to party and this and that. And he hate to wake up early. So I would work the morning shift.
Then he'd
call me. Hey, can you work the evening shift? Yep. Evening shift. Then go work out.
So it was a perfect fit for that
perfect
situation.
Perfect fit. Like, I did you found someone the guy who could said. Just yeah. Yeah. And I gave up on personal training all together. I just like supplements. That's the way. You know, sorry, learning about supplements, turned a blind eye to like how like fraudulent supplements were and just
hawking
nothingness to people who didn't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, try to be a salesman. I've never sold a day thing in my life. And like,
well, I think we're always selling to some extent if we believe
in
something.
Fair enough. So. Yeah. Yeah. And I just idolized the guy and did whatever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was super cool.
Sounds like, awful. So, I mean, what happened with the girl situation?
So the girl situation, that's interesting because this is where it kind of started turning around. And I,
it so was there a, was there was a little bit of, you know,
growth,
bark or bite to his bark, I guess. Like yeah. You did grow a little bit in this area.
Yeah, I was kind of forced to grow, being in scenarios like learning to manage a store by myself and mm-hmm. everything like that, and take care of him sometimes. You know, like he'd get too drunk and like I'd be carrying him.
Oh, holy.
You know, and I just, you know, I remember one time like and that's also where I started doing MMA training.
Mm-hmm.
So get this. So I would work a shift at the store either morning or evening, go do MMA training for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then on the weekend do a full bodybuilding split on the weekend. And that would just be me all day, chugging protein shakes every hour, every hour. And I got shredded.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of activity.
Yeah, all while, and then going out on the weekends, him pretending to be his bodyguard.
Mm.
That was the shtick. So I had an excuse to be, like, antisocial.
Oh.
Because I was afraid of interacting with people, because people were like, hey, yeah, how's it going, man? Like, you know, and on the comedy thing and everything, that completely fell flat. Like I didn't practice any humor or creativity during that time. Mm-hmm. I was only obsessed with working out and becoming a, you know, owning a supplement store. And I got completely shredded, and there was a lot of down. This was a failing base business as well. So I had a lot of downtime, and I'm young. I'm working out constantly. My testosterone is through the roof. I do online dating. There's mm-hmm. a little computer there. He didn't mind.
And of course.
All I would do is go on Plenty of Fish every day. And rough estimate, I'd send about 50 messages a day.
Okay.
Every day.
Yeah.
I got one date out of hundreds.
All right.
And that was a pinnacle moment in that I... When I was online dating and I got in shape, like I was in crazy good shape. Like I could have been on the cover of a magazine. And I posted those topless photos of myself in the bathroom at the
work bathroom. Oh, you told me about this. Yeah.
At the work bathroom, because I took the photos at work. And I posted them online. And I remember I got a message. Someone messaged me. I was like, oh, it's no. working. Oh, my God. A girl messaged me out of the blue. I'm making it. I'm doing it. And all it said was, hey, yeah, we know you look good, but please put on a shirt. You don't need show off. And that message crushed my soul.
You think?
Crushed my soul, like my entire reality imploded on myself.
Yeah.
Like I could only imagine what that girl thinks if she knew that was the impact she had on me.
She probably had no idea.
No, of course she didn't. Absolutely.
No, she's probably just a young girl just trying to
respond. Yeah, she's just like, oh, another one of these douchebags.
I'm yeah, like, she had no idea.
No, exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing about it.
But so, I mean, you know, you're ripped. You should be.
No girl. I never went.
But you look like a movie star.
Yeah, not aren't a single girl. Aren't you supposed to get a car and went out with me that entire time. I was at like just peak ripness. I couldn't get a date.
One of these days, for maybe another episode, I'll get into some of those stories because I know you have some very good stories when you were in peak condition.
Yeah. But
for the purposes of this episode.
Yeah. So getting on with it, I was still a virgin at the time as well.
So this is what, 24, 25?
No, this is like 21.
Oh, okay. We're still back in
20. Yeah. A lot. This is
that a lot of stuff age, happened.
A lot of chapters began and closed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people tried to help me. My friends started a Facebook page to try to get me laid.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. I had really hot girls try to get me laid. Mm-hmm. They want to have sex with me because, no, Vito, no,
mm-hmm.
he may look good, but I don't want to fuck him. Ugh. Which made things even worse. So it was fucking heartbreaking, and I just kind of gave up on a lot of it. After that day, I just gave up on the intensity and the dream. You know, I stopped working out as long, as hard, as intense. Just it all just like a big part of me died.
Yeah,
you know, died in a shallow, empty grave with no one around.
Mm-hmm.
No one cared. And while there, there would just be regular. The whole store was a sitcom. Just regular, like a Seinfeld episode. These regular suspects would come in, the wacky, zany people, and interact and this and that. And it was so bizarre. Even my boss, like, this is a sitcom. Like, I can't believe.
Even your boss?
Yeah, even my crazy boss. My boss was just like, what the fuck is the store? It's just, there's always some kind of drama and thing happening in the store constantly. I was just mm-hmm. observing it. So I remember this one girl would come regularly and we would just talk.
Yeah.
We would just talk. And I was talking. Again, this is the point where I didn't think any girl would ever like me.
Mm-hmm.
If no girl's going to like me when I'm ripped, no girl's going to like me ever in my life. So I kind of just.
So that was a yeah, real funeral.
I thought I was I thought I was just going to
be virgin forever.
Die alone. Yeah. Die a lonely virgin. You know, that's what I really thought.
Mm-hmm.
And this one girl would come to the store all the time and we just talk. And she'd need help working out. And man, you get me started working out, I'm fucking there. I'm all go.
Of course.
And I remember I asked her, I was like, oh, have you seen Star Wars? Like, no, I haven't seen Star Wars. You haven't seen Star Wars? We got to see Star Wars. You got to watch Star Wars. And then oh, why don't you come over? I'm house sitting somewhere. We should watch Star Wars. She didn't want to watch Star Wars. Yeah. You know?
I had so much hope for you there.
Yeah. And I was excited to see Star Wars. She wasn't that into Star Wars. She was.
I mean, the subliminal messages.
Subliminal message. Yeah. But she
wasn't that interested.
Yeah. She gave me my first hand job and,
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
At the store?
No, when I visited her, she was house sitting.
So you guys did. Oh, so you did do. You did go see her then.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. I thought you guys she nixed it.
No. Oh, I mean, went over.
Oh,
and,
okay. So she said yes, but not to Star Wars.
Yeah, she we saw Star Wars, but mostly I was just staring at her big boobs.
Oh, at least you're honest.
Yeah, and she I was inherently really good at giving massages because
mm-hmm.
when I was MMA training and personal training, you just learn about anatomy and massage.
Yeah, you just figure out how things work.
You figure it out. So I was really good at giving massages, and she really liked massages. So she take off her bra and have her top just kind of slowly drift lower and lower and can I touch your boobies? It's yeah, you can. Sorry.
And we maxed out the volume.
Oh, yeah, maxed out the volume. Yeah, and
you got a little excited.
I remember, and to be this long, she came up to me one day. Is like, hey, I need help moving. Can you help me? I'll buy you sushi. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
We went for a sushi, helped her move into her new place, and I slept over, and nothing happened. And then the next day, something happened. And she's like, are you ready? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm ready. Oh, I'm probably ready. Yeah, and then I gave her a massage to warm her up and whatnot. And then she went out, put on some sexy lingerie.
That's really sweet.
And then we did the deed. And nice. It was fucking awkward, and it was short. Not because I came quickly. In fact, I was so nervous. I had a hard time. Finishing.
I know that about you.
Yeah So and that was it. And ironically, I could have gotten laid twice that same day.
Yeah, when it rains it pours.
Yeah ironically, that day I lost my virginity. We went for sushi and he's like, oh shit, I gotta go train somebody at the gym. So we went for sushi, she dropped me back off of the gym to meet up with somebody who was this girl, who in hindsight, really fucking liked me a lot. Like a lot. And we train. And I would train her. And it was so fucking dumb, obvious. And again, my dense brain, she'd be like, like, that's a pretty good technique. Just shoulders back. And like, she'd be sticking out her giant breasts at me and stuff like that. And then she'd like, oh, let's hang out some more. Let's go take a shower at my place.
You're like, I got to train MMA.
Yeah, I got to train MMA, bro.
UFC.
Yeah. And then like, we visited her grandfather. And like, it's bizarre. It's like, and she's like, oh, this is my personal trainer.
Oh my goodness.
We went to her parents' house. Her parents were fucking loaded. I'm like, holy shit. Then we had a shower separately. But clearly, if I push it,
this
it,
is the story. This clearly, is the one.
If I pushed it, it could have been so together. Good.
I love and, this. And, you remember, might as well get into it since you're here.
Yeah. And I took a shower and like I jerked off the shower because I was like so horny. Because she was just my type.
Yeah.
And I remember I finished. As soon as I put on my underwear, the door just opens and she just walks in. Just like, oh, hey. It's like, hey, how's it going? What's going on here? What's going on? Yeah, what's that? And like, she was expecting to see something, and she made every hint. I'm there in my underwear, and she's just there admiring me, just talking about how hot I am. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I like clouds.
Awesome. Yeah, and
the sun's nice.
And I remember... Weather's good. The funny part of it, I was like, yeah, I really need a haircut. You know,
that's what's important in those moments.
Yeah, I was thinking, I had an uncanny ability to think of other things other than sex.
Well, I mean, to some extent, I mean, it's understandable you'd be a little scared.
Yeah, so I was talking about, oh, I really need a haircut. I was like, oh, I could cut your hair. I was like, sure, cool. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll get a mohawk or something like that. And she's like, oh, I love guys with mohawks. Oh my God. So sexy. Oh my God. And then I sat on the turlet, also known as a toilet. And then she took like some safety scissors and started cutting my hair. And then we went out for sushi.
You're like half naked with each other.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She was more clothes than me. I was mostly naked. But yeah, she cut my hair. And we just went for sushi. So I had sushi like back to back. I was a happy camper. Mind you, I didn't look in the mirror at what the haircut looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I just went, put on my clothes and went.
Okay.
And we went for sushi and we had sushi. And then she dropped me off of my house in her Lexus. And then she's like, well, maybe you could train me pro bono or something. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, maybe I think of something.
And
obviously I fucking blew it, and I go in the house and the first thing I do,
she gave up.
She just kind of like, oh, I guess she's not into me,
or you're just too dense.
She's too dense.
Hello.
I would have blown my mind to be hooking up with her. And the first thing I do is I go and it's like, oh, I need to go take a whiz. And I'm like do 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 do. Turn to the mirror. Oh my God. Oh, and it is the most horrific. Like, if a 4-year-old was cutting your hair and they hated you, that's what my hair looked like. Just blotches of hair missing, hair, random hair sticking out. Immediately, I took a whiz and I buzzed my entire head.
She was angry with you.
I don't know.
She was angry. She was like, why can't he figure it out? Like, I'm gonna butcher this man's hair because he does not put out.
I went to a restaurant with the worst hair.
She was probably so confused by you. Like, who is this guy?
God only knows. God only knows. But yeah. And that was lost my virginity. And everything kind of just, you know, expedited after that. Like, you know, the store was just going under, and eventually I got fired for not upselling enough. And like,
yeah,
okay.
Of course. Yeah, whatever.
And that's where I got into bouncing.
Yeah.
You know, which is going to be a whole episode.
Yeah, that's going to be a whole thing.
And my life was just a life of mediocre. I'd still go to the gym. I keep myself relative shape. I wasn't keeping myself in peak condition. Mm-hmm. You know, peak condition was 190. Like, yeah. I was just ripped, but I would keep myself like 210, 220. Yeah. You know, just consistently and worked out all the time. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I would get laid like maybe once a year. Just mm-hmm. a random hookup.
Yeah.
A disappointing random hookup. And just a big leap forward. That was my entire life till 26.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of where I was going. Yeah. I wanted to hear.
At the age of 26 is when I finally have a girl that is going to, that wants to be my girlfriend. I tried and busted my ass for years and years on end to get a girlfriend. And it finally happened at 26.
It sounds like that was really important to you.
It was. And also horribly disappointing because she posted a Craigslist ad. And sight unseen. I'm like, okay, well, I'm messaging almost everybody on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And I'm like, okay, what do I got to lose? And she responded back. And I'm like, okay, sweet. She wants to go out. Oh, a girl wants to go out with me. Shit. I got to figure out a date.
You got to actually.
Yeah, I got like, oh, shit. And I'm like,
go for a
like,
shower, oh, let's go clean to the, yourself up.
Let's go to the aquarium. Like, plans got kiboshed, but, you know, she wanted to sleep in, and we just went out to eat. Yeah, it just became one after another. And I liked her as a person, but I wasn't really interested in dating her.
Oh, I see.
You know, she, at that time, we've talked about this, and we're still good friends. She was rock bottom self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
She would take anybody.
Okay.
And she was willing to put up with the weird 26-year-old, never-had-a-girlfriend guy. You know, because I still worked out. Still, so, I mean, like, she in liked a way, the big muscle guys.
Yeah, and in a way, you guys kind of fulfilled a role for each other.
Yeah.
I mean, there wouldn't really be many other options in that position.
There was just none. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, like the horrid thing about it is like I thought like, oh my God, I'm turning it around. I'm mm-hmm. turning this sinking ship around.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, all right, I could get a better girlfriend right away.
Mm-hmm.
No. And that relationship was kind of off and on for 1 year. And then like I fucking sunk that ship. As hard as it could be.
You know? You feel like you sunk it?
Oh, I did sink it.
Oh, you did.
So we dated off and on for a year. You know, we enjoyed each other's company. We both loved food. We both loved watching Jersey Shore as two Italians do. But it just, there was a lot of things missing in the relationship. And the sex was some of the best ever. Stupid headphones. And yeah, I destroyed it because one day while at work for a security company, I meet another girl mm-hmm. and she actually shows interest in me. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, and it's that new kind of thing, that yeah. new car smell. And I was like, well, I've been with this girl and it's like, we're constantly arguing and this and that. It's just on rocky shores. And I'm like, I'm ready to move on.
Okay.
And she was, I didn't know at the time, she was a homewrecker.
Oh.
She liked the fact that I was in a relationship and she wanted okay. me to drop that.
So she was really interested because you're in something.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't like lying. I don't like keeping secrets. So eventually I confess like, hey, I'm kind of interested in this other girl and
mm-hmm.
kind of blah, blah, blah. And like.
Been there.
Yeah. And. I had to make a choice, either this new girl, this old girl. I'm like, kind of pick the old one. I kind of like Chris Rock. You gotta turn that around kind of thing. But she laid the seeds for destruction. And after that, my girlfriend did not trust me one iota and eventually like trapped me in a bait and switch.
Oh, yeah.
She had one of her friends yes. messaging me on Facebook like, hey, good looking, what's going on? And I'm like, what's up?
You know, so, like, I mean, in a way, you were similar to that ex in a way. I mean, you were, any attention was good attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you guys had that in common.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a good fit.
Yeah. And then it fucking ended and just, all right, well, back to where I am.
What did that feel like for you? I mean, there must have been like some excitement there. I mean, I'm familiar.
Be single?
Well, I'm familiar with the situation of like having something that you've been with for a while and then having someone kind of, you know, and this is me in my 20s talking.
Yeah.
Another girl kind of give you attention right away and making it really, let's make it like very poignant in that attention, like very, like just super, mm-hmm. like, just wants your attention.
Hit you over the head with a frying pan.
Yeah, like literally, you know, I want you and this is what I want. And then there's like a certain bit of excitement and then kind of like a letdown that happens there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to imagine what it was like.
Yeah, so me and the girlfriend, we continue for a couple more months. Then she does the bait and switch with the fake Facebook person.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, you know, I'm like, well, fuck, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, she sends me the longest hateful.
Yeah, she's text probably pretty angry.
But in that time, the other girl that was like, keep my number just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Wink.
Yes, I winked at
you. Yeah, we actually winked at the same time. And I kept her number in like an area in like in a spot where I would easily forget about it,
mm-hmm.
but not totally forget about it. And broke up. And then I'm like, hey, I call her up and she was in a relationship. I'm like, fuck. Well, got nothing. and just to make a long story short, like I, you know, a couple, like I think a month later, the guy she was seeing kind of fucks her and chucks her,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then like it's her birthday the next week and she invites me over to her birthday. And I'm like, and all our fucking cousins love me. I'm like, hey, it's Italian guy. Hey, love Italian guys. Mm-hmm. Ooh. But the chemistry was completely gone.
Really?
Yeah. We try, like, we hung out at the end of the birthday. Everyone's kind of done and out of the house. And it's just me and her and her overly protective cousin. And we're just sitting on the couch together. And I'm like,
just nothing?
We felt absolutely nothing. She felt... Again, homewrecker kind of scenario.
Just the excitement. I think for both sides, it happens.
Yeah.
To the best of us.
Yeah. I left and I was just like, well, I'm frightened because I don't know when I'm ever going to be, someone's actually going to be willing to date me again.
So this was, what, 27 now?
Yeah.
And so now you are?
Still bouncing.
I mean, like, well, how old are you now?
I think 27, 28. Yeah, let's say 28.
No. How old are you, like, physically right now?
Oh, 32. Yes. Oh, 33. Sorry.
Being dense again.
Used to be good numbers.
So what happened, I mean, between then and now? Is there any major updates? Just bouncing, which we'll do an episode on?
Yeah, just bouncing. I got into some of the worst depression in my life. I was thinking really suicidal thoughts. And I gained a ton of fucking weight to where I am now. I went from like, you know, maybe 240, you know, not fat or anything. No one ever called me fat. And then I ballooned up to 350, like in a matter of a year.
What year was that?
That was probably 29.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that much longer because work was just becoming hell and I lost a lot of faith in people at work for dumb reasons. And the place I was put at by this one security company, it just was fucking hell.
Yeah.
It was the worst work environment. And I was so alone and so... just sick and tired of life and everything seemed to be crumbling around me. And I felt fucking so hopeless. I'm like, is this my fucking life? You know, working the shittiest fucking bar in Surrey, just slowly dying.
Yeah.
You know, and and no one,
I mean, there's a big loss there. I mean, we're talking about somebody who
Yeah.
I mean, you essentially had this belief that if you went the way of the Hollywood stars, that you would have it all.
Yeah.
And then you kind of figured out in some way, shape, or form that that just wasn't the way that it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from my eyes at least, it seems really understandable that someone who already has all of these challenges with, you know, depression and maybe having challenges with other people in life, and now to find out that it really wasn't the way that you thought it was, seems really quite understandable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And the longer time went, just the more frustrated I got with life.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I had no dream, no aspiration, no goal, no nothing, no step forward. I was just like, I'm gonna, and longer time went, like, no girl wanted anything to do with me.
So
every once in a while, like, someone who would get drunk and like, hey, I want to fuck you. Like, okay.
So we have had a pretty epic episode here.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of, I wanted to do a separate episode where maybe we talk about things that we're passionate. I mean, it just, you can go into a person pretty much
for days,
so many different ways.
Yeah.
And maybe in that bouncing episode, maybe we could talk a little bit more about both of our passions and what we're into and our current role models. But I just wanted to end off with this one last question, which is what brought you to Men's Junk?
It was two things. One, you asked me.
Yes. But I mean, like, in terms of, I mean, no one just jumps up and just does a men's health podcast.
Yeah. Well, it was only a couple of years ago. Year maybe two that I found the men's group, men's support group, and that really started turning things around very slowly. Started gaining confidence in a future for myself, and, you know, started like learning about myself in a completely different way through the eyes of my fellow men. In a space that was open to that.
Yeah, which is awesome.
And that really turned things around. Something like, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, like, that needed to be part of my life years ago. You know,
yeah,
that,
of course.
You know, and now, like, finally pursuing a real passion of voice acting and acting, like, something I should have done when I was a fucking little kid. You know, now just getting a head start of it, you know?
Yeah. And then naturally it just seemed natural to come here and do an to actually be on Men's Junk as a co-host. It's a natural fit. So thank you, everyone. I think it was really brave of Vito today to just tell us all about his life.
I didn't give you this spiel at the end of yours.
No. Well, I just wanted to give you some credit.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to give you some credit.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's one of the things about Men's Junk that I think is really awesome, is that we're very shameless about different parts of our lives. And hopefully you felt that when you listened to my episode.
It was great. Your episode was great. I really loved it.
I'm happy that you enjoyed it. So thank you so much, guys. And this is me, Sebastian Ankiel.
And Vito Rizzo.
And we are
Men's Junk.
Signing off. Thank you so much and catch you next time.
Watch out for mattress and lanes. We are going home tonight, folks. Bye.